I'm Karen Hartglass, and you're listening to It's All About Food. How are you today? I'm glad to be back. I missed last Tuesday because I was planning my big event, and I'll tell you about it one more time. I know I've talked about it quite a bit, but now that it's over, I want to tell you how great it was. So we had the Happy Birthday review last week on Earth Day. Yes, it was my birthday. I know you know. And it was really a lovely, lovely celebration of all good things about food, even though I did get to share some not-so-nice stories about food. The bottom line is we have the answers for a healthy, delicious, sustainable world if we can all move towards eating plants that are grown free from toxic residues and pesticides and herbicides. But you know what? The answers are there. It's not rocket science. We have the answers, but the action, we all need to take action, and this is where you come in. We all need to do our part, and we all need to do something. And the first step I believe in is eating a plant-based diet, because not only is it nutritious and delicious, it's fun. It's easy. I think it's easy, and I try and help other people see how really easy it is when you stop resisting. And I'm part of the Food Revolution Summit this week, which is so empowering. It's also exhausting because it's 3 hours every day. I don't know how many of you are taking part in this, but if you go to responsibilityandliving.com and scroll down a bit to the Food Revolution Summit, it's going on April 25th to May 3rd, so we're halfway through. And there are three experts that are interviewed every day by John Robbins, and then his son, Ocean Robbins, gives some really lovely commentary and sums everything up. And I participate in giving the recipe and tip for the day, helping people along in their plant strong food journey. And I'm so inspired by this event because there are like 150,000 people that have signed up and are listening. And that is, isn't that inspiring to know that so many people are taking the time to learn? And in the forum for this event, I'm continually surprised and amazed, but also happy. I read all these people who are stunned to find out a lot of the things that we already know about, but they're stunned to find out what's going on with our food system, and they want to make a difference and help. So this is really exciting. We've been talking about genetically modified food and the politics of food and the exploitation of animals and people when it comes to food, and then, of course, nutrition. There are so many things that have been covered in such a short amount of time. So I want you to check that out when you have a chance. So let's bring on our first guest for today, shall we? Joshua Katcher, the discerning brute. He is an adjunct professor at Parsons, the New School for Design, and has taught sustainable fashion at the Laboratory Institute of Merchandising. He's currently writing his first book, Fashion and Animals, and has lectured on that topic at Princeton, the American University of Paris, Parsons, Brown, UPenn, and FIT, among others. Katcher started the men's ethical lifestyle website, The Discerning Brute, in 2008, and launched the Brave Gentleman label and e-commerce platform in 2010. Joshua, how are you today?
Hi. I'm great. Thank you so much for having me on the air.
You're very welcome. Well, people may not realize it. I talk about food all the time, and there's so many crazy things going on with food and exploitation and the poisoning of food and the poisoning of our planet and the cruelty to animals, and I'm out of breath listening to all the horrible things that are going on with our food today.
I know.
But when we allow what's going on with our food system to occur and allow animals to be exploited, it's that much easier to allow the same exploitation to go on with our clothing.
You know, it is a parallel industry, and what a lot of people don't realize is that the fashion industry has global implications the same way that the food industry does.
Yep.
And the fashion industry has a very interesting way of being able to be perceived as benign or frivolous or harmless. We look at clothes, and we see it as just you know, it's something fun to do. Go find a deal, pick out a nice outfit. But the thing that we don't see about fashion is that it is a global industrial complex where it affects millions and millions of workers, billions of animals, ecosystems everywhere. It's considered one of the top polluters in the world, and one of the top causes of waste when it comes to textile waste. And when you look at and when you combine the issues that affect workers, the issues that affect animals, and the issues that affect the environment, you're talking about a really serious, serious industry.
Yes. Oh, so what do we do about it, Joshua? Are you here to save the day?
Well, I would like to. That would be fun.
Yeah, put on a cape.
Yeah.
A fashionable cape.
An ethically made cape. You know, there's a lot of small independent designers that are popping up everywhere that are really going against the grain, and they're pushing back against this fast fashion system. And when I say fast fashion, it's similar to how we look at fast food. It's a very similar concept. It's, you know, really cheap, high volume production to make the greatest amount of profit for the industry, and the minimal amount of expense and considerations provided to those that are wrapped up in the production process. And just the other day was a new holiday that we started celebrating just a couple of years ago called Fashion Revolution Day. And this year, Fashion Revolution Day asked everyone to consider the question, who made my clothes?
Mm.
And that's a really important question to ask. And I like to contribute to that and say it's equally important to say, of whom are my clothes made, in addition to who made my clothes. So animals are turned into fashion objects, and they're hidden behind this industry where we don't see how they're processed. And if we do see how they're processed, most people, it goes against the values that all of us already share.
It's a very interesting world we live in, and I know that many of us fall into this lifestyle where we want a deal, we want a bargain, and it's so tempting because you can walk into just about any store, everything's on sale, and there are some things that are incredibly inexpensive, and you want it. It looks good.
Yeah. And that's the dangerous thing about fashion is it's similar to food where, you know, we want it, it tastes good, and we don't want to think about how it's made. And that's what I call aesthetic irrationality, where because something is pretty or because something is yummy, that makes it a good and not a bad, even though the way that it's made might be considered a bad. But that's hidden under layers of marketing and very expensive advertising, and that's the thing that the manufacturers don't want you to think about. So they create fantasies for us to believe, and those fantasies are the fashion ads we see in the runway shows and all of the glitter and glamour that surrounds the fashion industry. And the parallel to that is what we see happening in the food industry with Happy Meat and organic meat and all of these attempts to greenwash and whitewash things that would otherwise be seen as horrible.
All right, so let's just talk about people for a moment. Let's get to the animal story in a moment. But we hear occasionally about some nightmare that occurs in a non-Western country where people are locked in a building or crammed in a building, and they're treated really poorly. They're paid next to nothing, and they're just like slave labor. And then some disaster happens. There's a fire. Everybody dies, or they can't get out. But these things are going on all the time today. It's not a random experience. A lot of our clothing today is made by, like, serfs, feudal labor.
It is. And the problem isn't getting better. It's getting worse. And that's what a lot of people don't realize, that we think that sweatshops was a big issue in the 90s and we somehow worked it out. No. What's happening is the companies are being much more quick with their responses about let's say that we are addressing these issues, let's say that we're making our policies more safe for workers, and that we're going to have more oversight, and But really, it's just happening more and more frequently. And if anybody watches John Oliver on HBO, I think it was either last night or the night before, he did a whole segment on this very issue. And it's really, you know, he uses comedy to address this. And if you just Google, you know, John Oliver sweatshop, it'll pop up. And it's really worth watching, because what he does is he shows the history of how frequently this happens, that there's a tragedy in a factory, a bunch of people die, or they discover that it's a bunch of 12-year-olds working 14-hour days and being paid nothing, and they can't even buy the equivalent of a meal for their family with a day's salary. It is slavery. It isn't like slavery.
No, it is.
And this is not getting better. So this has a lot to do with our desire for cheap clothes, our desire and our entitlement to feeling like we deserve a $10 T-shirt. It seems that we're willing to pay a little bit more for organic food now, and we should be willing to pay a little bit more for fair labor and fashion, and also for ethically made fashion that doesn't use and harm animals. Animals are even more exploited in the fashion industry than laborers are, because the laborers can at least attempt to organize. They can at least talk to each other and try to fight for their rights and protest, and they often get crushed in their protests, but at least they are able to do that. The animals aren't even considered valid beings. They're just seen as units of production, so their needs are very, very rarely met, and who speaks on behalf of them? If we let the industry speak on behalf of the animals, of course they're going to tell us that the conditions are fine and they're happy and that they're well taken care of, and it's just a haircut. That's what we always hear from the wool industry. It's just a haircut.
Oh, God. I remember when I first read about wool production, I got some little book, and it's horrifying to read what goes on to sheep for their wool.
Oh, it is something that most people don't think about and had no idea about. And it's something that the sustainable fashion industry likes to claim is sustainable, that wool is this product that is it's considered biodegradable and natural, and we hear all these lovely keywords, and then we look at the actual numbers and we look at how the sheep, the livestock themselves, impact the environment. We know that livestock is the number one cause of the worst environmental problems. That means sheep. There's 1 billion sheep on the planet, 1 billion.
Mm-hmm.
That's one for roughly every 6 people. And when you consider the amount of resources that need to go into raising that number of sheep, the amount of land used, the amount of drinking water, the amount of chemicals used to process the wool, and it's a high-volume, high-turnover industry where the shearers are expected, they're paid by volume, many of them in America and in Australia. And so these are prey animals. Sheep are prey animals, and they don't like to be pinned down, so they resist and they fight. And in undercover investigations, you can see these undercover investigations if you just search wool expose or wool investigation. They resist. They don't want to be pinned down. And then these workers who have to shear 1,000 sheep a day get frustrated, and they end up beating these animals over the head with their shear blades, and they get cut. And it's a nightmare.
Yes.
And it isn't just a friendly haircut. And it's terrible for the environment. So that's a big problem with wool, yeah.
And then I've read how destructive they are on the terrain, specifically in Australia. And then when the animals are spent, just like in the food industry, then they're like shipped over to the Middle East to be slaughtered as meat.
Yeah. So when you look at the area of the world, New Zealand and Australia, which is one of the leaders in the production of wool, their number one source of greenhouse gas emissions is sheep.
Wow.
And the industry really doesn't want people to know about that. And they just in the last several months have paid for studies to try to show that wool is eco-friendly, because it didn't get very positive results when they had their life cycle analysis, their life cycle assessment looked at So they're doing a little bit of backpedaling and trying to figure out how to repackage wool as environmentally friendly again, because it's not. But if you look at the hair by itself, detached from the animal, then yes, it's a great product, but can we have wool without the animal? And that's a question that we're actually asking right now, that science is asking, and that we're able to answer. And the answer is soon, yes, we will be able to have wool and fur, and we already have leather without the animal attached. And there's a lot of really exciting things happening in the realm of biotechnology that is going to enable us to remove animals from the production equation.
Well, I have to say that I never thought about the greenhouse gas emissions from sheep, so thank you for bringing that up. It was just
sure.
Never connected the dots. That's genius. And just one more thing to be upset about.
But regarding your question about the point about the land, yeah, land erosion from sheep grazing is a big problem. And what they tried to do for a while was confine the sheep in the same way that they do to pigs on these high confinement gestation crate style operations. So they tested that out and it didn't work out very well, and so they stopped doing that. But they realize it's a problem. And whenever there's a lot of money at stake, you're going to see the industries doing anything and everything they can to find a different way to make it work, or to or just to greenwash and deny until they absolutely can't anymore.
This greenwashing is really important to pay attention to. So people may not realize there are companies that want to appear that they're with it and doing good things for the environment, and they make all kinds of claims, and some of them are misleading, some of them are false, and
yeah.
They appear green, but they're really, really not.
Yeah, it's a really big problem, and it's confusing, and it's really disheartening for citizens to have to try to decipher whether a business is being honest or not. And the lesson that we learn again and again is that if an industry claims that it's environmentally friendly, you should be suspicious, and you should look into it and find out, are they really environmentally friendly? Are they really ethical? And what is at stake for them? Why are they making this claim? Those are really important questions to ask, because if an industry that's a traditional industry or a huge corporation, oftentimes it's just marketing.
Now, let's talk about sustainable fashion. So is there a sustainable fashion organization or certification? What does that all mean?
The concept of sustainable fashion in itself is not regulated per se. There are regulations that exist in different countries regarding whether you can label something organic or whether you can label something, made in a certain country. But no, it's a deregulated concept, and it's really up to the companies to proclaim for themselves whether they are ethical, whether they are sustainable. Under the sustainable fashion umbrella, you have all these different concerns, the labor concerns. So a company that takes pride in being all made in the U.S. or all made under fair labor conditions could be considered, under the umbrella of sustainable fashion, or a company that has all organic plant-based fibers like linen or organic cotton or recycled cotton, any sort of recycled material, those are under the umbrella of sustainable fashion. But it really, there's no oversight. And one of the reasons for this lack of oversight is because, like most people think, the politicians don't see fashion as being an important thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that first point that I made, that fashion is seen as a frivolous thing, that permeates every area of our society, that the people in power also see fashion as a very frivolous thing. The people who don't see fashion as a frivolous thing are the people who are making a ton of money, and some of the world's most wealthy people are the heads of these fast fashion companies. The head of Zara is, I think, the fourth wealthiest person in the world.
Huh.
And Zara is a fast fashion company, like H&M, like Forever 21. These companies where you can go in and buy a $5 t-shirt, and then it falls apart, and then you go and you buy 10 more, you know, within a week. These companies are making a killing, and that pun is intended.
Yeah. You know, I'm sure politicians know about them because they know where the money is, and they want to support the folks that are going to give them big campaign contributions.
Right.
Yeah.
But
anyway.
The fashion, one of the fashion editors at the New York Times made a really interesting point when she said that that sometimes people she interviews say, "I never think about fashion," and she responded by saying, you know, this is something that you should think about because it isn't just about your clothing choices. It's about manipulating people into how they perceive you. So there's this whole other side of fashion where it isn't just about the physicality, the materiality of it. It's also about the sociology of fashion, the symbolism, and the power that can be gained through appearing a certain way and through utilizing fashion to become who you want to be perceived as. And that makes it an even more complicated topic.
Absolutely. And that's what makes marketing so evil. You know, they are screwing up the minds of so many young people, and so many young women today have all kinds of image issues, and it's spilling over to the young men. And, you know, you're not fat enough, you're not thin enough, you're not, your butt's not big enough or small enough or whatever, and it's a problem.
It is. We
big
were just
problem.
Talking about that in my class this morning. I teach at Parsons, as you said, and we have a whole section in my fashion class about height and the issues of creating unachievable standards through advertising and marketing, where even the models that they hire, you never see the real model. These models are retouched in Photoshop, and they're made to be perfect. And there is no such thing as a perfect human being. Human beings come in all shapes and sizes and all colors, and you don't often see people who see themselves reflected in the fashion industry. And we've seen a lot more recently with with curvier models, with models of more diversity on the runway, and with even models that are, in wheelchairs it's been much more inclusive. But there's still so much to be gained and so much more to do in that realm.
Now, women have a much greater variety and selection of clothing, especially when it comes to cruelty-free options, things that don't use animal products, no wool, no silk, no leather. Men have more of a challenge.
Yes. Well,
where does a discerning brute go to look fashionable?
Men have a twofold challenge because most mainstream men are a little bit, I mean, it's been better in recent years, but shopping for fashion is perceived as a feminine thing. And we live in a sort of macho culture, a patriarchal culture, and guys don't really want to identify as fashion consumers. So a lot of them claim to just not be interested in fashion, but we all participate in fashion. If you close your eyes and pick up a t-shirt off your floor and you pick up a pair of jeans, you know, that you've worn every day for a month and put them on, you're still making a fashion decision and you're still participating in the fashion system. It's inescapable. Even if you're a nudist, you're still making a fashion decision.
It's a choice,
guys have a problem. There isn't very much offered by way of menswear that is ethically made. And that's why I started the Discerning Brood in 2008, to address that void and to start addressing men in a similar way that GQ or Esquire or Details magazine appeals to men. I wanted to appeal to men in this way, but also make them feel comfortable about talking about issues that we care about, that it's okay for to talk about sustainable menswear, and it's okay to talk about ethical menswear and to be a hero and a protector and a defender of workers and animals and the environment, that this can be a masculine thing. And I wanted to create that space and hope that men who were looking for fashion would find the discerning brood and be turned on to issues that they wouldn't have sought out otherwise.
Well, I think more men are getting into fashion these days. There's all kinds of things that have been going on in the entertainment world that spill over into everyday life. More men wearing creams and lotions and makeups and hair products. And the fashion seems to be getting a little more interesting and adventurous for men, which is nice. But I have some questions that I don't know if you have the answers for them, but you can find, for example, for a man who wears suits, either occasionally or regularly, you can find summer suits, cottons, and linens that are quite lovely. But when it comes to winter time, and you need a suit to wear. I mean, for example, we went to a funeral a month ago, and we didn't even know it, but it was outdoors, and we froze. And my partner Gary was in a suit, and it was a thin suit because he doesn't have a heavy winter vegan suit.
Yeah. Well, my brand, Brave Gentleman, we make those. And I think we're the only brand on planet Earth that specifically makes autumn, winter, vegan, sustainable, fairly made men's suits.
And what are they made out of?
We use a variety of materials, and one of the most exciting materials that we're using right now is a blend of recycled cotton, recycled poly, and it has a beautiful wool-like hand feel, and it's a gorgeous tweed. And actually, in the factory that I work with in New York City right now, I'm working on a new collection that's going to be ready in probably about a month for this coming autumn-winter season. And it's really impressive, the textile technology that we're looking at right now, the technology to recycle fibers that would otherwise have ended up in the landfill, or to engineer plant-based, biodegradable bioplastics, polyesters that are made from recycled soda bottles and water bottles, or any number of new technologies. The exciting thing about technology is it's always getting more refined, it's always getting greener, and it's always getting more efficient. And when you compare that to an animal model, like having animals on a farm, that really can't change that much. There's only so much you can do to modify a living being. You can confine them, you can modify what you're feeding them, but ultimately, the industries that rely on animal bodies to produce fibers are really inefficient, and it's just bad design. When you look at it from a design standpoint, it's incredibly energy inefficient, it's incredibly slow, and it's really messy. And these new textile technologies, I like to call the material that I use future wool. We have future wool and future leather and future fur, and we have all of these materials that are superior to their animal-based counterparts. But we're up against industries that are very well funded that don't want to be competed with, like any other industry. So I hope that my suits and my boots collaboration that I have with Novaka, that these looks get out there, and not just to people looking for a vegan suit, but it should appeal to anybody who likes good menswear.
Well, what seems to succeed in our capitalistic society is an idea that attracts investors who think they're going to get a good return on their money. So we have companies like Hampton Creek Foods that are replacing chickens to make eggs with plant-based eggs, and we have Beyond Beef where they're replacing the animal to make plant-based meats, and investors are really excited about this. So you need to come up with a product that investors will want to invest in.
We're working on it.
I bet you are. Now, I heard about a fabric made from the green leaves from pineapple plants.
Yes.
That was exciting.
It's called Pinyatex. And the woman who spearheaded Pinyatex, she used to be a leather industry executive, and she realized that leather was incredibly harmful to the environment. The tanning process is completely toxic. But even before you get to the tanning process, you're already starting with the industry that is the number one cause of the worst environmental problems. So
yeah.
You can't have sustainable leather. You can't have vegetable tanned leather, as they like to call it, and this greenwashed version of leather, because the tanning process is just, you know, piling on even more harmful effects to an already problematic livestock-based industry. And when we think about leather, we can't think byproduct. We have to think co-product, because looking at leather as a byproduct is really damaging to the idea that, you know, when they tell us, oh, we're just making use of something that would otherwise be thrown away, this is not at all the truth. If it wasn't for the leather industry, a lot of these companies would go out of business. They rely on the money that they make from leather as one of their primary economic investments. So without leather, these industries wouldn't be able to, you know, make their ends meet.
Okay, I have one more question about some of these synthetic materials.
Yeah.
A lot of times when I buy something that's polyester, there's a lot of static cling. Are some of the newer ones solving that problem?
Solving the problem of static cling?
Yes.
I don't, you know, that's not something I've looked into, but I
put it on your list, Joshua.
I'll put it on the list. Solving static cling. I think if we just demagnetize the Earth, we'll be okay.
Oh, okay. Well, that might lead to some other problems.
I'm just kidding.
Well, Joshua, it was great talking to you today, and there's a lot more that I think I need to learn from you, so we'll have to pick up this conversation another time.
Thank you so much for having me. And if anybody wants to find out more about these topics, go to thediscerningbrute.com or bravegentleman.com.
TheDiscerningBrute.com or BraveGentleMan.com, which you are, Joshua Katcher. Thanks for joining me again. Take care.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye. All right, let's take a quick break, and we'll be back to talk about vitamins.